Calling all detectives. I've met a lot of frightened men, but I once had a client who was so terrified that he even had me searched. That is the situation on this page from my casebook, the casebook of Jerry Browning, private detective. Listening to these stories from my casebook, you may have the idea that I, Jerry Browning, private detective, solve every case I get. Far from it. Among my clients at one time or another, I've numbered some men who are pretty hard to get at. But when Hollis Redding phoned me to come and see him and his secretary led me into an anteroom, I had the new experience of being frisked.
I'm sorry, Mr. Browning, but Mr. Redding insists that every person be searched for concealed weapons before being admitted. You can go in now.
Hollis Redding was a 120-pound man sitting behind an 800-pound desk. He jumped up as I entered.
Browning, did Frank Carter search you before he let you in to see me?
If you mean your secretary, yeah, he did.
Then why didn't he press the alarm button when he found your gun?
He didn't find my gun. Take it easy, Mr. Redding. It's not his fault. I just don't happen to have a gun on me.
Oh, well, it's all right then. Sit down, Browning.
Look, Mr. Redding, I don't know what your trouble is, but believe me, it won't seem nearly as serious after you talk about it. Redding blinked rapidly.
Yes, I will trust you. Mr. Browning, somebody wants to kill me. I don't know who it is or why he wants to do it. Oh, I suspect everybody, even Carter. Mr. Browning, please save my life.
A wealthy man was so afraid of being killed that he ordered every visitor searched before admitting him to his office. Redding took a sheaf of letters from his desk drawer.
Here are the death threat letters I received, Mr. Browning.
I pulled the letters over to me. I'll read them a bit later. What else has happened?
At least twice somebody has fired at me. Once while I was going from my car to my house. Another time while I was walking in the grounds. There have been near accidents, heavy objects falling close to me here at the plant, almost being run over in the street. As many as a dozen different kinds of attempts on my life.
Have you reported this to the police? Redding grimaced.
Yes, I did. They made an investigation and found nothing.
I nodded, glanced through some of the threatening letters. Mr. Redding, these letters don't look like the work of the same person.
That's what the police said. Browning, I don't care who wrote the letters. Maybe it's a plot. Find out who wants to kill me, and I'll pay you $100.
Mr. Redding, my minimum fee is $40 a day plus expenses. I'll do my best. But my fee is not contingent upon results. Redding winced, finally agreed to hire me for a week, and at my insistence gave me a $200 retainer fee. Back at my office, I examined the death threat letters carefully. They made no sense whatever. There were over 30 of them on all kinds of stationery, bearing post office marks scattered over a wide area. Some letters typed, others in clumsily disguised handwriting, both masculine and feminine. A few letters even had mysterious designs crudely drawn on the paper. Late that afternoon, I telephoned Redding. I want a job in your plant, Mr. Redding. No, I don't want you to recommend me. Just tell me some department where you know they're short-handed and it doesn't require any special skill. The shipping room? Okay. You'll hear from me. Redding's company manufactured and shipped novelties to all parts of the country. I got a job there as an assistant shipping clerk, and it wasn't long before I heard,
"Hey, Joe! Has Flint Puss been getting any more letters lately?"
"I don't know, but if he didn't, he should."
Okay, maybe it can be arranged.
I could have grabbed the two clerks then and there, but the thing seemed so easy, practically falling into the solution of a case, that I decided to wait a bit. It was a good thing I did, because during the lunch hour that same day at a diner near the plant, I sat next to two men whose conversation identified them as bookkeepers for Redding and Company. After a while, they stopped talking shop and...
"Do you know, I've been thinking. The effect of that last letter is just about worn off, Mr. R. He's overdue for another."
That still wasn't all. Late that afternoon, I heard a truck driver telling one of the girls from the invoice department,
"Listen, Putz, if you've got a real sizzler to send Redding, give it to me. I'll mail it from down the line."
I was reasonably sure I could find other letter writers within his plant, but I didn't bother to report back there the next morning. What I aimed to do was widen the scope of my inquiry.
"Yep, been gardener for Redding now into a full year. Longest anybody ever held the job. Meanest cuss who ever lived, that man. Well, Sure, I get a rifle. Shoot it at gophers and any other pests I happen to see around.
Mr. Redding resigned his membership in this club some time ago. He felt that we were not compatible. He accused me of deliberately throwing a banana peel on the sidewalk before the club. Deliberately, mind you. By now, I had a pretty good idea of what was going on. But the payoff came when I checked the handwriting on one letter against samples of the handwriting of Redding's own secretary, the man who'd searched me for a gun. Yeah, the handwriting matched. I walked into Redding's office, put some money on his desk. I've worked 3 days, Mr. Redding. $120. I can't solve the case, which means you have an $80 refund coming. That is.
You mean there's no help for me? I must die?
I don't think you'll die. Those letters are harmless. As for the accidents, you imagine part of them. The rest are practical jokes. Except that those jokes can backfire. Mr. Redding, everybody hates you. Your employees, your associates, even those who used to be your friends. My guess is that somebody wrote you the first letter as a joke. You made so much fuss about it that others took up the idea, elaborated on it, added near accidents to frighten you further. What happens beyond this point is up to you. If you humanize your behavior and stop acting frightened, the letters and the rest of it will cease. Otherwise, one of these days, somebody will carry the joke too far, and you'll be just as dead as though he'd meant to kill you. It's entirely up to you. Well, that's a case I didn't solve, strictly speaking. But Redding must have decided I made sense, because about a year later, I saw a picture of him at a company picnic, and people were actually smiling. So I guess he worked things out along the lines I suggested. Like I said, it isn't always necessary to solve a case. Sometimes you do better by removing the cause of the crime. Listen next time to Calling All Detectives, Mystery Drama, Mystery Quiz, and a chance for you to match wits with yours truly, Jerry Browning, Private Detective.